Wow, thank you for the tremendous service we've had already. What a blessing it is to my heart. I eat, drink, and sleep this. Lord, please help us be a blessing to missionaries. Help us reach the world. And I can't wait to come back another time and have you meet my wife, the better half. We have a great time. I was in a church in Georgia. I was telling the pastor's wife, and I have a good time wherever I go. I mean, I like being with me. Why wouldn't they want to be with me, you know? And so I'm preaching a Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday, and there is a woman there, and I'm not kidding you, she had the most severe look on her face, and she just glared at me. Now, I don't know if her husband died or if he lived. I don't know which one she was mad about, but, right, I don't know what's going on in the congregation. And she never smiled. I think if she'd have smiled, her face would have cracked. And the next night, the same thing. Didn't shake my hand, didn't say a word. Next night, same thing. Sunday morning, just glared at me. Looked like she'd been weaned on a pickle, if you can imagine the faces. And she just glared at me. And after the Sunday night service, she brushed past me again, never shook my hand, never said a word. And she took my wife's hand, and she said, I just have one question for you. What kind of sin were you in that God cursed you with that the rest of your life? And she pointed at me. And my wife said, she said, I was backslid, deep sin. She said, this is my cross to bear. I have to put up with this every week. And she said, is he like this all the time? And she says, at home, on the road, in the car. And, of course, you know, and my wife now brings it up. You know, Randy, if I wouldn't have been in deep sin, I wouldn't have had to put up with the likes of you the rest of my life. But 49 years of happy marriage, and I hope to bring her and have her meet you. This is a delight for me to be in a good church. I mentioned on Friday night, apple pie without the cheese is like the kiss without the squeeze. And commonly, in a missions conference, I will close with the passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, or 2 Corinthians 9. It's a thick book. And but from verse 6, God loves a cheerful giver, on down, and it says, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. These kinds of things that you do, your pastor's leadership is just golden. I do this every week, and to watch a good pastor challenges people to do more for the cause of Christ and for the sake of missions, and to have you abound to every good work and do diapers and cornhole and everything in between. But there is a secret to that. This caring about others, that shows up in the church. The healthy churches have a burden for souls locally and for around the world. Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri has a motto up on their mission center. It said, the light that shines the farthest shines the brightest at home. And to me, take it off the tape. Oh, wait, this is still on. I'm raised on a farm in Wisconsin. And we had 60 dairy cows. And my dad said, you know what the most important task we have here on this farm? He said, the cows only give milk after they have a baby. Right? Same with humans, right? Same with any mammal. And he said, in order for them to have the baby, they have to get pregnant. And he says, whether you know it or not, the most important task we have is to keep the bull healthy. When you're raised with that understanding, hey, there won't be any milk if there's not babies. And there won't be any babies if we don't have a healthy bull. Instead of him being just unnecessary, all of a sudden he became the essential element. Now I want to say, one bull with 60 Holstein cows, he was smiling most of the time. Because we're taking care of making sure he's healthy, and his feet are cared for, and he's got a great diet and all of that, and then he had friends. And so, but I'm just saying, you can imagine when you're raised with that, even as a lost kid, 5, 10, 15 years old, it was, we've got to keep the bull healthy. Because otherwise the rest of it ain't going to happen. Well, that's the way it is. And I hate to sound, I don't want to make it that crass, but if we can keep healthy churches, missions will take care of itself. A healthy church will win souls locally and will reach out to the world. You know what our job is? Keep the bull healthy. Don't. That is so vital. When they ask the question, hey, do you ever get satanic attacks? Can I tell you, the devil loves to cause strife and division and misunderstanding, pride. I've watched some of the most wonderful people say and do some of the most hurtful things. And so that's my prayer all the time is, Lord, keep the church healthy, and then we'll do what comes natural to a healthy church. And so tonight, if you'll turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5, most of you recognize this is the Sermon on the Mount and the Lord Jesus' first public ministry. And all of you know the Beatitudes, blessed are. And you get down to verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, and blessed are the peacemakers, and blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, all the way on down. And then it says in verse 13, 14, and 15, 16, I want to change channels and challenge you for the local ministry. In the local community, understand, mission starts at home. And I pastored. I have a pastor's heart. I didn't get to go to the mission field, so then let's have a church that will launch this, you know. And so, if I'll let you stay seated, but I want you to very carefully follow along. Verse number 13: Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? Is henceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Verse 14, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I want you to notice the second word in verse number 13, ye are the salt of the earth. It does not say, I want you to be, or it would be good if you tried to be. It says, ye are the salt of the earth. And I want to preach on that tonight. Very simple. If I've been true to the Bible, fair with the scriptures as we've talked. Tonight, I want to just take a brief scripture and tell stories. People get mad about that, but when the Lord Jesus, he'd quote one or two Old Testament verses, and then he would expound on how that applied. And we're going to do a little bit of that tonight, all right? So during the time since I've been saved, there's been a lot of preaching on Jesus got to come back. This is it. Hey, they split the atom. Hey, they approved homosexual marriage. Hey, this is the end. He's got to come back tomorrow. And, of course, George Orwell's 1984 and all the preaching. And I do believe the Lord Jesus is coming back sooner rather than later. But nothing changes in my marching orders. Occupy till I come. Just stay everlastingly at it. He'll come, he that shall come, and will not tarry, it says. So I stay busy. But there was the latest iteration of it was in 2000, the Y2K. The grid's going down. There's going to be martial law. Get extra propane tanks, buy extra food, build a bomb shelter, a hand pump well, buy a generator. Which works good for me because I need a generator now, and there's a bunch of them for sale that have never been used. But I don't mean to dismiss. I believe we ought to live in the light of the return of Christ. Understand that? But there's a lot of predictions that just didn't happen, and it hurt a lot of our credibility, right? But there was this guy, and he was a flower child right straight out of the 60s. They say if you can remember the 60s, you weren't really there. But I'm Sam, bell-bottom pants, tie-dyed T-shirt, a Volkswagen van with orange shag carpet type of guy, long stringy hair, wisp of a guy, and he's a survivalist. And he's going to make sure that everybody survives Y2K, and he is exercised about this, and we gotta help preserve. And so he's got this video he produces, you know, before the turn of the century there, and in there, he goes into great depth. Hey, all through the Middle East, they know about corning beef. They put it in a brine. It's not just Israel and Irish, but corning or soaking meat in a salt brine preserves it. And hey, all through history, the Pacific Rim and all the island people, they live on fish and rice, and they know how to dry their fish in the sun, and they put a little salt on it, and it preserves it. And when they came to America, the Indians already knew they'd use salt to preserve the buffalo hides, and they would salt their corn and their meat and hang it up in their, and hey, salt's always been a preservative. And when they came to this country, Nina Pinta and Santa Maria, hey, they had to have the oranges and the vitamin C to fight off scurvy, but you have to have protein to live. And the way they did it was to put meat in a barrel. And I want to teach you tonight, he said, how to preserve meat. If you're in your bunker when Y2K hits, and you're in there for 3, 4, 6 months, you're going to need protein. You've got to pay attention here. Your life could depend on you learning these lessons here. He's hair on fire serious. And he's got a big barrel there, and then he's got a table just heaped with pork chops. And then he had bags and bags of rock salt. And he explained, hey, this is how they did it. They've known this for centuries, and this generation isn't educated on the basics, so I'm helping you. So he starts by pouring in 4 or 5 inches of rock salt in the bottom, and he smooths it all out, and then he takes the pork chops and he lays one in there and another one beside it, another one, and he looks at the camera. He says, now don't overlap them. If you get them too thick, well, then it'll spoil. So you got to make sure they're just next to each other. And oh, be careful, don't touch the edge of the barrel. We've got to have salt on the edge because it'll spoil and ruin the whole barrel. And you put in a layer. Then he poured in a couple more inches of salt, and then more pork, and then more salt. And he stops, and he looks at the camera, and he says, so one real important thing to learn is you could have too much meat, but you can't have too much salt. And I thought, well, there's a sermon right there. Right? There's a sermon. And then more salt, more meat, more salt, more meat. And then he had a pregnant pause and he looked right at the camera and he made a statement. Remember, folks, in order for this to work, the salt has to touch the meat. And boy, I thought and thought and thought on that truth. It does no good to have a barrel and meat and to have a block of salt over here on the other side of the room. It does no good to have a barrel full of meat and put the salt on the top of the barrel. It does no good to have bags and bags of salt leaning against the outside of the barrel. In order for this to actually work, the salt has to touch the meat. You want to go home now? So I travel for this is my ninth year. Every church realizes if we're going to have a future, right? There's no success without successors. If our church is going to have a future, we've got to reach this next generation. We've got to have some young people. Us old people are going to evaporate, and we've got to have some young families. And so there's some discouragement in churches. I was in a church in Minnesota, 68 years old, and the youngest person in the building. Now listen, they don't have a good future. No nursery, no rompers, no toddlers, no first, second, third grade, no teens, no young marriage class. Just, it looked like Q-tips. White hair, bald head, white hair, bald head, white hair, bald head. You should see it from up here. Hey. So then I take note of those churches that are vibrant and growing and have vitality and young families, and I try to learn what are they doing that I could pass along to help other churches, right? I mean, I'm not in the condescending, criticizing, cynical. No, hey, if we can learn some good things, then let's share them and pass them along so it'll help others, right? So I'm in a church that's in Nebraska, 450 people, and I'm seeing lots and lots of elementary and junior high kids, young families all smiling at me. And I said to the pastor, look at this. You got something going. I said, what do you attribute this kind of growth and vitality? He said, we had Firefighter Sunday. And I said, wow, what was that? Well, you know, firefighters hazard their lives. They're our heroes. We had a Sunday school class on stop, drop, and roll. Always do what a fireman tells you. We had special New Testaments printed up with a firefighter's emblem on. We had flyers made, and we put them up in the restaurants. We sent a letter to the fire station. Hey, we're having Firefighter Sunday. And he said we had Culver's gift cards. But when Firefighter Sunday came, only one firefighter came, and he was already a member of our church. And he asked if he could have all the Culver's cards. So me and the youth pastor made an appointment, and we're going to go see that fire chief. 11 o'clock Monday morning, we're in his office. We're sitting across from his desk. We slide a flyer under his nose. And we said, yesterday, we had Firefighter Sunday, and none of you came. And we're here to apologize. Why would you come? You don't know us. We don't know you. The ones that are working can't come. The ones that have time off are spending time with their family. Many of them probably have their own church. How presumptuous, how arrogant for us to think that just because we made an announcement, you'd walk in our doors. But we did notice that the fire hydrants in our town get painted every 4 years, this quadrant this year and this quadrant the next year. And we're asking, could we take that job off your hands? Our teenagers will take wire brush and brush the rust and the flaky paint off, and we'll put tarps around and clean up the area, and then we'll prime them. And you give us the orange or the green or the yellow or the red, and we'll paint with whatever, and we'll paint those, and we'll have our junior high girls put puppy dog noses on the nozzle end where the water comes out. Could we paint the fire hydrants? He said the very next year, 26 firefighters came to Firefighter Sunday. Nobody said, Pastor, you got to get better sermons. Nobody said, how come we don't change it to rock music? How come we don't throw out the King James Bible? Why? Listen. Listen to me. The salt has to actually touch the meat. They have to know who you are, what you're doing. I'm in another church, and there's all kinds of little kids running around. And I said to the pastor, well, you must have some dynamite youth pastor. Look at all these monkeys. And I mean, curtain climbers, they're all over the place. And he says, no, he says, he's kind of a lunk. I'm thinking of firing him. And I said, well, what? He says, well, yeah. You see the two older ladies on the left side in the second row? I look over there. Now, you ladies know this is true. There are some women who are just elegant people. Their bearing, their carriage, their mannerism, their makeup, their hair, their dress, they're just elegant. These two were somewhere near the other end of the spectrum. Plain as a mud fence. And I'm looking at him, and I says, yeah, what about him? Well, they're both retired school teachers. Their husbands have passed. And in our, we're in a richer area. And wow, all these $400,000 homes. And in order to support that lifestyle, they have to have mom and dad both working. Every morning, these ladies would watch the SUVs and the crossovers and the hybrids go by. Minivans, mom's got three kids in the back, Starbucks in her hand, toothpicks under her eyelids, and she's mucking her way to work so she can, and she drops some off at daycare and some in school. After school, it gets out at 2:45, but mom's usually working later than that. Dad's usually working later than that. Latchkey kids could come home and let themselves in. But in our town, the younger kids are taken to after-school daycare. And they're warehoused in our town at the Salvation Army. They got a big gymnasium, and the kids are just watched until mom and dad can get off work. And those two ladies, just normal 98.6, bebopping along normal, got a burden for those young mothers. And they said, well, hey, think of what a pitiful existence that is. They've got to go to work, come home, scramble something together for supper, beat the kids to death to get them to do their schoolwork, and put them to bed and start again the next day. What a rotten life that must be. Why don't we go there to the Salvation Army and volunteer to just tutor the kids with their homework, so the mom can at least just come home and enjoy an evening with her kids? I'll do math and science, you do history and English, and we'll just start. They go to the Salvation Army, they don't say, can I preach? They don't say, can I spank them? Hear me. They said, could we have a room and just offer? The kids that'll get picked up at 4, we'll help them first. The kids that'll get picked up at 4:30, we'll help them second. The kids get picked, so on. They go, from 2:30, 3 o'clock, they leave their house, and they go there until 6 o'clock, Monday through Friday. No, they don't get paid. They're just helping kids with their schoolwork. The pastor said, when me or the youth pastor goes and knocks doors, and it's Saturday morning, Mom comes and looks at us and thinks we're Chester the molester and slams the door. But when those two ladies knock the door and the kids come running out from behind Mom and say, that's the lady that helps me with my math, they get let in. He said, they've led more people to Christ than any staff I ever had. Why? Because in order for this to work, the salt has to touch the meat. You have to care about what they care about. I can't tell you how much I believe this. I was in another church, and wow, I'm looking around, and there's this lady in a wheelchair. Oh, she's, I'm going to say 70, but obviously she's, you know, not able to be mobile. And the pastor had announced, hey, this is our soul winning campaign, and we got to go reach the lost, and she's a good Christian, and she's burdened for the lost. And she says, Pastor, I can't go knocking doors. I can't hardly even make it to church, and I don't know what I could do. And the pastor said, you just pray and ask God to give you an idea of how you could touch a life, how you could help somebody, how you could cultivate a relationship, how you could make a friend. And this lady happens to like needlework. And she puts an ad in the local Shopper. If you want to know how to do knitting and crochet and needlework and darning, if you want to know how, you can come to my house. I have room to do 3 people at a time. And we'll do it from 5:30 till 8:30 on Tuesday nights. I'd love to teach you how to do it. Now, just as an aside, I personally believe anybody that can take a skein of yarn and go, and out comes a sweater, that's demonic. That's gotta be Antichrist. That's where the golden calf came from, I'm positive. But sitting next to the lady in the wheelchair are 3 women with a smile of heaven on their face that she led to Christ in her home. See, if you were with me, if you were in my hip pocket, if you got this, there's some exciting churches. And there are people that are winning the lost, reaching into the world, and winning souls without compromise and without criticism. I'm in another church. I said to the pastor, look at all these young families. He said, yeah, it was the orange t-shirts that did it. And I said, the orange t-shirts? Yeah, I'm looking, there's not one person with an orange t-shirt on. He says, well, this lady was reading in the paper, and in our town, the junior high school was having problems. Michelle Obama took all the candy bars out of the vending machines and put broccoli in there, and they have all the health food at the lunch, and there's food fights every day, and the kids are throwing food, and they're mocking, and they're spitting on the cooks, and they're throwing food on the floor, and the janitor's quitting, and the cooks are quitting, and the teachers refuse to go in and supervise. And this lady in a fundamental Bible-believing Baptist church just like this says, well, hey, workers shouldn't have to work under conditions like that. Why, you know what? Why don't we get 4 of us to go at the 11:30 lunch hour and 4 more to go at the 12:15 lunch hour? And what we'll do is we'll get t-shirts, orange t-shirts, and here's a deep thought, we'll put on there, lunchroom monitor. Ooh, that's tricky. They went to the principal of the school and said, look, we don't want to preach. We're all from this church, but we love kids, and we're sympathetic to the challenge you have. Could we help you? We'll come every day. These four will come. Hey, they're there. They're walking up and down the aisles. They're not hitting anybody. They're not preaching at anybody. It's, hey, Susie, would you like another chocolate milk? Tommy, could I take your tray to the wash station? They walk up and down, but they have an agenda. Tanya Mitchell. Is Jordan Mitchell your brother? Do you live over on the west side? We're just chatting here, folks. We're just chatting. But when it came time to be the end of the school year, there they had an all-school assembly. Lined up on the platform was the entire school board for the district, the superintendent of schools, the principal of all the schools, and they asked the ladies with the orange t-shirts to come up. There sits the janitors, there sits the cooks. And when those ladies walked in, the entire school stood up, including the student body, and gave them a standing ovation of appreciation. Now hear me. They gave them each a $50 gift card, presented them with an award from the district, and asked them if they'd come back again the next year for their invaluable service. Nobody got paid. But the pastor said, you know what? Those eight ladies, they brought all kinds of kids to our youth program and all kinds of kids to our activities, and they're the ones, they know these kids by name. They're not just a bunch of strange hoodlums out on the street. These ladies have spent a year getting to know who they are and who their families are and where they are in the birth order. But you know why? Because they cared about their soul. Nobody said, Pastor, how come our youth pastor isn't smarter? Nobody said, Pastor, why don't we get a drum set like all the other churches? Nobody says, hey, we got to have at least three electric guitars and a bass. No. You know how they got people? By caring about people, by loving people, by touching lives. I could tell you stories like this all day long. There's a guy in Pennsylvania, and he has a burden for souls, but he's not much of a talker. And so he says, hey, I know what I can do. I'm going to teach guys how to do gunsmithing. Here's how you redo a stock. Here's how you blew a barrel. Here's how you adjust the trigger mechanism. Here's how you modify it to make it more your gun. I'll teach hunter safety. I'll teach concealed carry classes. And so, hey, he is as normal a guy as you'd ever look. He's not a pastor. He's not a staff member. He's nothing except a soul winner. And sitting in the pew next to him, on this side one and on that side one, are two men that he's led to Christ that he taught how to gunsmith. I'm not talking about joining your local tavern league baseball club and drinking beer on second base. I'm talking about you being in a place where you set the agenda. I'm talking about you being in leadership. I'm in a church, and they got lots of young families and all these kids. And I said, Pastor, what's the secret around here? He says, well, look at the lady, and he points to the spot. And I said, yeah, what about her? Well, and I'm going to say this. She was about 5'5", beautiful blonde, 40, 50 years old, just perfectly healthy body, just as the kind you see in photographs, the kind that would be a model, spectacularly beautiful woman. And I said, well, tell me about her. Well, he says, her husband's a multi-godzillionaire, and they live up in the hills, and they've got an estate of a couple hundred acres, and it's all fenced, and they got a paddock for the horses. And she actually drives a Rolls Royce. She's never had to work a day in her life, and she has a $130,000 Mercedes as a grocery getter because she doesn't want to take the Rolls every place. But he said, she's a consecrated Christian. And he says, she said, how could I? I mean, we're behind the walls of the gate, and we got an actual booth and a security guard out front, and I don't know. So she starts praying, what could I do? Now listen, if I had their money, I'd throw mine away. I don't know anybody who just buys their wife a Rolls Royce. But he says, you know, she's brought over 30 young people to Christ. Now I think a lot more of her. Right? Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth for the Lord, she shall be praised. So I said to her after church, I met her husband, and I said, the pastor says you're a pretty fervent soul winner. Tell me about it. Well, she says, I don't know. She said, I just was praying, God help me to find a way to touch lives. And I saw a sign that they were hiring school bus drivers. So I went down and applied to drive school bus. She says, I never drove one of those cracker boxes. She said, they gave me a 72-passenger bus. And she says, I have wiped out more mailboxes than anybody. She says, I've been in the ditch. They've had to tow me out of the ditch a dozen times. She said, I back out of a driveway and I get the back end over in the ditch. And she said, I'm the most terrible bus driver. But she got her CDL. She gives every penny of her income to missions. But in June, she runs her bus route with a church bus. And she goes to the same neighborhoods. And she knows the kids, and they know her. And she talks to the family and invites the kids to vacation Bible school. And she's the one that works in the class. And she's the one that leads them to Christ. And she's the one that goes in the home when they drop them off and thanks mom and dad for letting them come and invite mom and dad. He said, this one gal has done more for our church than any program I ever started or ever promoted. I could tell you stories like this on and on. I'm in a church. Here comes 9 men between the ages of 18 and 24, all handsome, suit and tie. Now listen, most churches I go into, there is no college age group. There's 30 in beginner church, 20 in junior church, 10 in junior high, 6 in the high school, and 1 still there when he graduates. I'm not making this up. That's everywhere. And here comes 8 handsome single guys, suit and tie, and they stand up and they sing 4 songs a cappella. I said to the pastor, wow, my daughter said that a man-eating lion got loose in our church and starved to death. Where do you get guys like this? He says, well, you know, Joe. And I said, no, I don't even, who's Joe? The tall guy, the bass on the end. Nope, he looks just normal. I said, well, what's with Joe? Well, you know, the ping pong. Nope, I don't know the ping pong. Well, he's burdened for souls. He's a freshman in college, and he's not even from our area, but he believes in getting people to church and getting them saved. And So he went to the YMCA and asked if he could start a ping pong club because he's pretty good in ping pong and he likes that. And so he got a time slot, 6 to 9 on Thursday nights in a room with a couple ping pong tables, and he just put a flyer up on the campus. Hey, if you want to be in a ping pong club, come to the local YMCA. And every one of these guys, he had over 40 guys sign up. Here's the beginners, here's the intermediate, here's the pros. Hey, we're going to have competition. And hey, we're going to have ping pong. But he goes a half hour early and he sets up a table and he has some Doritos and pop, or he has some donuts and coffee, or he has some kind of nachos and cheese, or he has a little snack. And then he has some tracts, and he always has his New Testament. And he just chats with them, gets to know them. And then after they got it rolling for a few weeks, he said, hey, anybody interested in staying afterwards for a Bible study? And he said, he's won. Every one of those guys is a ping pong player off the campus who came to play ping pong. Listen, you're smart enough when you go fishing to put a little worm on the hook, right? He did it with donuts and nachos. He did it with a mutual interest. He found, I know a guy that's got a Christian classic car cruising club he started. But he's sitting in church next to two guys that he reached. See, here's what I've discovered. Those that want to find a way to get it done. Those that open their mind, and I could honestly, for another hour, I could tell you story after story. There are many churches flourishing, growing, exciting to be in. And the common denominator is not, oh, we got to compromise with the world. We got to be culturally relevant. We got to dip the standards. We got to change how we operate. If you're waiting for this church to hire the next blue chip staff member, oh, if we could only hire Rico Suave, if we could only get this guy who would just have a dynamite personality. Oh, listen, churches aren't growing that way. And I'm going to say this. If you're waiting for the pastor to come up with all the good ideas or the church to promote the next wonderful program that's finally going to work, you're barking up the wrong tree. The churches that are growing have lay people seeking the Lord. Lord, please help me know how the salt could touch the meat. I'm not talking about compromise. I'm not talking about joining a bowling league where everybody's drunk in the seventh frame. I'm not talking about you conforming to the world. I'm talking about finding a way. I was at a church and the pastor said to me, Brother King, we canceled Friend Day for the last 2 years. Because our people don't have friends. Hey. Hey. God help us. People are dying and going to hell. And I'm going to say this. Don't you dare just throw conscience money in the plate and say, well, we're reaching Uganda. There's people next door to you. I was in a church, actually here in Florida. And the pastor says to me, Brother King, I'm sick of this. Our church is dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. And I don't know, I'm going to find something that works. Now that's pure pragmatism. Find something that works. And I said, what do you got in mind? He said, well, it's going to be one of the four C's. No, pretty well informed, but I said, I probably used to know what the four C's are, but just refresh my memory for tonight. And he says, well, I'm going to do one of four things. He says, I'm going to either become Catholic He says, I don't mean change the name on the door, but I'm going to get a lot more formal in our worship because that seems to be popular today. Or I'm going to go Calvinist. I'm just going to say, no, people aren't being saved and the church is shrinking, but that's God's fault. He's not calling anybody anymore. Or I'm going to go charismatic and we're going to have the gold dust in our teeth and all the miracles and the healings. Or I'm going to go contemporary. We'll get four women in spandex up there to do choreographed while they're... And I could do that. But he's, I'm going to find something that works. Now, you've never seen blood drip out of my eyes, but I said to him, preacher, before you do that, let me ask you three questions. I said, number one, who in your church, you know your congregation, you're down to 80 people. Is there anybody in your church that's actually soul conscious? Do they pray for God to open a door of utterance so they can speak a word of witness? And the pastor says, well, I don't know anybody like that. He says, I don't pray that. Now listen, if people aren't being reached, don't give God a black eye here. He told us to pray. I said to him, okay, second question, what about tracts? Who in your church, if somebody tackled them, threw them on the ground and said, what must I do to be saved? They would have a tract at hand or a New Testament in their car or a John Romans in the glove compartment or some kind of Bible tract in their lunchbox or purse. And he says, well, I don't know. I've been pastor for 5 years, and we've never bought more tracts. Now, hey. They still had the old pastor's name on. He said, I was behind Judy in the grocery store, and when she was digging to get her wallet out, she had a crumpled up tract in the bottom of her purse. She might be the only person in our church. He was serious. And I said, a third question. Would you get in the car and take me to the 10 best families you have? Let's drive right up to their driveway. Don't tell them we're coming. I don't want her to clean the house. Just show me where they live. And we'll get out and I'll do the talking. And we'll knock the door of the people that live immediately to their right and say to them, hey, do you know that right there lives a Christian? They believe they're going to heaven. And they believe you're in jeopardy of hell. The Bible says to love thy neighbor as thyself. Have they ever expressed in any way any shred of care for your never-dying soul? Have they ever given you a tract? Have they ever invited you over for coffee? Have they ever given you a word of witness in a Christmas card? Have they ever invited you to the Christmas program? And then we'll go to the neighbor on the left side, and I'll knock on their door, and I'll tell them, hey, do you know that right there lives a Christian? They believe they're going to heaven, and they believe you're probably going to hell. Have they ever verbalized in any way a care for your never-dying soul? Have they come over and pled with you from the Bible? Have they invited you to the Easter musical? Have they ever in any way brought a cherry pie over or invited you to a cookout next door? Anything, anything at all to show an interest in you. And I said, then we'll go to your next best family. Now hear me carefully. We're not doing what we know we're supposed to be doing. Well, it's the last days. You can't tell me how much I hate hearing that. Sure, it's the last days. Sure, it's the last days. But the pastor says to me, well, Brother King, people don't neighbor like they used to. I actually live in a condo thing. I don't even know who lives next door to me. And I said, you're the pastor of this outfit. What's the matter with you? We are in God's business. Do the work of an evangelist. Teach and baptize and teach. And listen, you don't know what a joy and how refreshing it is for me to come here and see people join the church, people getting baptized, people going out and trying to reach lost souls. It's been a joy for me to be here. This is like an oasis for me. I'm going to close with this. I travel, and every day, if I'm driving, I get up early and I get on the road. And every McDonald's in the United States has the exact same thing at 8 o'clock in the morning. Romeo's, retired old men eating out. Romeo's, they're in there. Now, I've been driving for an hour. I've got to go to the coffee return station. I stop. I get another cup. I get a sausage biscuit. And I could do like you. I got my little tray. Hey, I'm in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm from Wisconsin. I don't know nobody here. And I could go over here in my icy little cubbyhole and I could just stare at those guys. But I don't do that. I don't do that. It's not by coinky dinky that I prayed before I left my motel room. It's not by accident. I stuffed a pocket full of tracks before I walked in the building. I have every intent of giving a word of witness. And I take my tray and I set it on their table. And I swashbuckle in between them. I pull up a chair and I say, "Sorry, I'm late, fellas." I do this all across the United States. I've been in 39 states the last 3 years. Never have I failed to get a smile. Never have they not moved their chairs out. I sit down, I start to drink my coffee. They already are bored stiff with each other. They've been meeting for 3 years and told every lie in the world. They tell stories of things that never happened. So it isn't just a minute and somebody says, "Hey, who are you?" I'm the only one at the table they don't know. "Well, I'm Randy King." "Oh, where are you from?" "Well, dairy farm in Wisconsin." "Oh, Wisconsin, you're a long ways from home. Where are you heading?" "Traveling through to West Virginia." "Really? What are you going to do in West Virginia?" "Well, I'm going to preach at a meeting there. I'm a Baptist preacher." "Hey, guys, watch your language. We got a pastor at the table." Right? I get up to leave. I take out a pocket full of tracks. "Listen, every one of you is going to spend eternity somewhere. This has got my name and address on it. If I could ever serve you in any way, please don't hesitate to call. But most important, on the inside, it tells you how you can know for sure you're on your way to heaven when you die. And boy, I sure wouldn't want to leave you after I just met you without giving you a chance to go to heaven.